Welcome back. Thank you to the Bump 2 subscribers who helped make this podcast possible. The second half of my conversation with Brigido Dove picks up where we left off. What about daily practice? How important is that? And what sort of daily practices are people looking at?
Well, the most important thing on a day-to-day basis is to be in the present moment. Now, either you are in the present moment or you're not. It's very simple. If you're not in the present moment, it means the mind has taken you into the future or the past. And so you can do this anytime, anywhere, when you're driving your car, doing the dishes, in your office. Just notice if you're in the present, or are you daydreaming about whatever, yeah, or dragging up soap operas from the past. And bring your awareness to where your focus is.
I find that finding your awareness is a task, actually. Not anymore. I've been meditating for well over a decade. But that meditation taught me so much. It not only taught me to be still and to have joy, but it taught me to be less reactive.
Yes.
And just to watch things happen. And when you can start bringing that into your daily life, it is life-changing.
It is. Absolutely. It really is. I mean, meditation is a very practical thing. You know, I think a lot of people think, oh, it's too woo-woo and candles and things like that. And you can do that. You can have candles if you want. But it's very practical and down to earth. Come into the present moment. Like, basically, where are you? Where are you? You know, are you off in the future somewhere? Or are you somewhere in the past? Or are you here now? Always here now. Come here. Be here.
You don't want to hang out in the past, because your chances are you're just repeating your bad patterns.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it's fine to have goals for the future. You want to have goals and where you're going and things like that. But you have to be very careful of the mind, because the mind can get negative and think, oh, well, what's the point of doing that? That's never going to work. And, you know, thoughts like that. And you have to be very careful of the mind. And so there is a fantastic technique called witnessing the mind, mm-hmm. which you might know, created by Gautama the Buddha 25 centuries ago. And it works. And, that's why it's lasted till this day. But basically, you just learn to witness the mind so that you are not at the effect of it. You learn to disidentify from it, so that you become aware you are not your mind. See, I used to think I was my mind. I used to think everything that, all the thoughts in my head, I thought that was reality. It's like, it's not. And then I got this big realization, oh, that's just the mind. It's just a mechanism in the head. And again, these expressive techniques help us with the witnessing, because they help to quickly dissolve so much of the chatter in the mind, so then it becomes easier to do the witnessing.
You know, I recently reread The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. Wonderful yeah. book. And one of the things he says about this chatter in our mind is, he said, stop and listen to it for a moment. If your friend talked to you the way you talk to yourself, you would give them the boot immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and just going back to the judgment, the person that we judge the harshest is ourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
And so,
but then we project that out on others.
We do. So one little technique that I like is, notice when you're judging somebody else or a group of people. That's saying nothing about them and everything about you. It means you are judging yourself about something. So bring that attention to acceptance of yourself, because the more you accept yourself, the more you can accept others.
No, I think that's absolutely true. Easier said than done, but absolutely true.
It's a practice. It's all a practice. But, you know, when you surround yourself with like-minded people who are also on this journey, it's so much easier.
Oh, that is key. It's key to have people who see this as something, I see it as something of a spiritual journey, actually. And it's a matter of constantly reassessing and asking yourself about yourself. It's a fascinating journey, actually.
Yeah.
But other people who don't have that orientation don't get it.
Yeah. Well, it's a choice, you know? It's a choice. And some people prefer to be in denial of their feeling state or what's going on inside of them. And they'd rather take medications, pills, or drink, or drugs, or anything to not feel.
And when you're not feeling, you're in trouble. You know that.
You certainly are. You certainly are in trouble.
What are some of your favorite techniques? I know you mentioned laughter meditation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm full of that right now because we just finished the laughter meditation program. Yeah, because it just makes me feel so great. You know, I think everybody knows that laughter makes you feel good. But I think maybe a lot of people have never thought about laughter as a deliberate practice. You know, we laugh at comedians or something on TV or whatever it is, but you can actually make laughter a deliberate practice. And all of my students and clients have the same homework for the rest of their lives. Laugh every day. This is how you get in the habit of it.
Can you give us a little bit of an example of a laughter meditation?
Well, we could do it together if you like. We're just going to laugh. Oh, I don't have my chime with me. Well, I could go and get it. It's just in the next room. And you and I could just laugh together. Then I'll do a chime, and then we sit in silence.
Oh, how interesting!
Yeah.
So all that
very simple.
Yeah. No. I had spoken to some people years ago when I had another website who actually had put together an international group of people who did laughter meditation at different times during the day, so that you could tune in depending on your time zone and everything, and spend 20 or 30 minutes laughing mm-hmm. with a group of people.
Yep.
And I thought, what a fabulous way to spend your time.
Yes, it is. It is. Yes.
In addition to the laughter meditation, what other types of expressive meditations do you teach?
Well, there's the gibberish, mm-hmm. which is also has two parts to it. You do the gibberish first, shouting out a lot of nonsense sounds, and also releasing all the emotions out. So it can get pretty loud and noisy, which is a good thing because you're letting rip basically from all the stuff you've repressed. And then the second stage, you sit in silence. So it's a powerful contrast between all the noise of the first stage and the silence of the second stage.
It's interesting you bring up contrasts. I'm getting a little off on a tangent here, but bear with me. You know, I'm working on this book, and I'm pulling all these commonalities out of all these podcasts. And one of the things I see is a commonality of almost duality, hot, cold, light, dark. You can't know one without the other. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I find it fascinating that we have to explore these extremes in order to come back to the center and have some sort of wisdom or understanding from the experience. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes. Now, the Buddha said the middle way, always take the middle way, right? However, we do need to express ourselves. And sometimes we need to go overboard a bit on that if we have a lot of stuff down, emotion and so on. But then we also need to sit in silence and just be with ourselves. So it's like being with people. I mean, the laughter meditation is a great example because the laughter meditation is all about relationships. We've all got our eyes open and we're all laughing together and looking at each other and so on, you know. But then when we close our eyes, we're on our own. We're together still in the group, but we've all got our eyes closed and on our own. And you need both because we need to be relating with people because that's love. That's how we can express our love and receive love. But then we also need time alone.
Well, it goes to the extremes of connection isolation.
Yeah. But there again, I like the group because, you know, isolation can be scary for people. But when we do it in the group, we're still together, just all in our own self with the eyes closed.
Now, you have several books out, don't you?
I do.
Talk about them a little bit.
Okay, well, I have my latest book is called, here it is, Lunchtime Enlightenment, Expressive Meditations for Manifesting Peace, Prosperity, and Passion. So this book is basically a how-to. It's full of, it's got probably over about 150 meditation techniques in it for everything under the sun. There's meditations for the heart because there's a chapter on love. There's a chapter on death and dying. Compassion, relaxation, because meditation is based on relaxation. And with relaxation, you always start with the body. So that's the first chapter because that's the most important. That's the first step. Always start with the body. So I talk about these principles of meditation. Trust is another one. There's a chapter about trust and what it is and what it isn't, because there's a lot of misconceptions about these things. So I've just laid it all out so it's very clear from a place of wisdom.
What is trust?
Trust is an inner knowing. Trust resides in the heart. And trust is an inner knowing that all is well. It's your connection to the universe, your connection to the divine. And when you have trust, there's nothing to worry about. There's no need for any anxiety. You know, when you look at any pictures of any of the old Zen masters or even the current ones like Thich Nhat Hanh, who passed away recently, they're not worried about anything. Well, of course, they're living in the present moment, which helps. But also they have tremendous trust that all is well and all will be well. And everything that happens is happening to bring us to greater awareness about ourselves first, of course, and then, of course, how we interact with other people.
Trust is interesting. I interviewed Mary Neal, who had a near-death experience, and if there's one statement I take away from that, she said that she moved from hope to trust. That's a fantastic paradigm shift in terms of how you live your life.
It is, because hope is, hope contains an element that everything's not okay.
Yeah, there's an element of uncertainty.
Uncertainty. And therefore worry, and therefore it's not very comforting. Whereas trust is comforting. It's reassurance. And you know, things like we know the sun will rise every morning and set every evening. Nobody worries about that, I don't think. I wonder if the sun's going to come up this morning. We know when the tide's coming in, it's going to go out again. We know that spring follows winter and then summer follows spring and so on. All these rhythms are in the universe, are in nature, and they are the backdrop to our lives. And we are a part of nature.
Though I think we've become very disconnected.
Well, the mind is trying to make us disconnected, but the body, heart, and soul are never disconnected. So it's just remember that distinction.
I think that's maybe why so many people find peace in nature. It's a combination of that that connection. And I also think it's a sense of being small and great at the same time. You're so small compared to the majesty of nature, but mm-hmm. you're part of it, and that's so great.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the suggestions I always make to everybody I talk to is to spend time in nature because it's very grounding. It brings you down into the body and it connects your feet to the earth. And that means it's bringing you out of the head because we want the energy coming down out of the head, down through the heart, down to our center, and also down through the legs to the feet connected to the earth. So always make sure your feet are firmly planted on the ground, like uncrossing your legs, uncrossing your arms so the energy can flow freely through. But yeah, nature is deeply healing and calming for us. And it's very important we spend a lot of time in nature. I go for a walk every day.
You know, I think all this is part of searching for an authentic self. How do you define that?
Well, on the soul level, we are all one. We are all connected on the soul level, but we all have different personalities. And authenticity is your soul connected to your personality. So everybody's expression or version of their authenticity is going to be different because we all have different personalities. But we all connected at the source of the soul or the spirit as one.
That's powerful.
Mm-hmm. It's good to know.
It is. Well, and I think the more you strip away of these programs that we have running endlessly in our minds that are not, you know, reality in any way, but we think they are.
Right.
I think that starts to bring you closer and closer to who you're meant to be.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The whole trick of it is to learn to disidentify from the mind and understand that that's just the mind which knows facts, but it has no wisdom.
Oh, that's a good distinction. It doesn't have wisdom. Actually, wisdom, I think, only comes from, is experiential.
Yeah, wisdom comes from the heart. There's the wisdom of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
There's the wisdom of the body. And there's the wisdom of the soul. So coming from a deeper place.
And I think the experiences we have in life generate wisdom, whether we want the wisdom or not. Sometimes the experiences are difficult.
Yeah.
But out of them can come a lot of wisdom. But you have to go through this stuff in order to gain or glean that little bit of wisdom that is the pearl in that experience.
Exactly. And that's the benefit of mistakes, because we learn from them.
Or hopefully we learn. If not, they seem to present themselves again.
They will. They will.
No, it's interesting. As I look at life, it kind of goes in a spiral. You keep revisiting different things. Part of that maybe is programming. It's just, I find it fascinating to see how these common themes keep coming up throughout your life. And they can be good themes. They don't have to be bad ones. I just think it's very interesting. And they're unique to each of us.
Yeah, because we are all unique. Absolutely.
I mean, certainly one of my themes is traveling. I always say when the going gets tough, the tough go traveling.
I thought they went shopping.
No, I don't like to shop that much.
Well, there's inner traveling.
That's it exactly. And I think over the years, I've certainly come to see there's external travel and internal travel. And they can, I think the advantage, one of the things that's interesting about external travel is it gives you, it's really a mirror to yourself. What do you see? What, you know, how are you reacting? And I think it's because it's new, it allows people to be more present moment than they might be in their daily lives. There's that element of uniqueness in travel or a new situation. And I think that you can use that to your advantage in a lot of ways. But ultimately, it goes back to that internal travel that is endlessly, it's endless and it's fascinating.
Yeah, it is endless, and it's deeply healing, and it's very relaxing, because the more and more you get to your center, then the more relaxed you become, the more full of joy and creativity, and then you can share that with others. And I've done a lot of traveling, outer traveling, is I think you can be a different person. Like, you can go to Spain and be very Spanish and all like this, and experiment with yourself. Or you can go to Italy and be very Italian, and just, you can try out different things and be somebody different, because you're usually always meeting new people who don't know you, so they have no prejudgment about you. And you can just be seen in the moment for who you are in that moment, which is very refreshing. I always found that with traveling in Europe.
Oh, I agree. It's interesting you bring that up. I took my sailplane cross country one year, and I'd stop at various airports and fly and, pack up again and move on. And one of the things I loved about that was when I showed up at a new airport, there's the usual pilot judgments and everything else that go on with, a woman with a plane, my God, she must be a bad pilot or this or that. The judgments are just amazing. But one of the things that I always enjoyed was the fact that it's kind of a clean slate. Nobody had to watch my growth in the early years or how many times I screwed up or how badly I did this or that. I just arrive as a completed package at that point in time. And at that point in time, I'm competent. I know what I'm doing. It's just so interesting that you mentioned that, because I think that being able to show up in the present like that is what it's really about.
It is. And when you meet new people, they have to see you in the present because they don't know anything about you. They don't know anything about your past. So they can only see you in the present. And that's just very enjoyable, I think.
Well, and ideally, shouldn't we all see each other just in the present?
We should. But there we go with the shoulds,
Yeah.
but the mind can come in with the prejudgments. And there again, when you do the witnessing technique and learn to let the judgments go by, then you can learn to just be with people, even if you've known them for years, be in the present with them, because everyone is different in every new moment.
And I think as you become more accepting of yourself, you can be kinder towards other people's quirks too, because we all have these quirks. And I think they can actually be kind of fun and enjoyable if you will allow yourself to not be judgmental.
Yeah, because it makes life more fun. It would be super boring if everybody was the same.
Oh, that'd be terrible. I would hate to meet myself every day.
Yeah, it just makes life fun and interesting. And, some people are a good match for you, some are not, and that's okay. You just move on,
What advice would you give somebody who is struggling in life and trying to find their way?
Well, find some support. I think that would probably be the first thing. Because when I think back to what I did, I was definitely struggling. And I found Osho that I decided to go and study with. So find some support around you. You might find it online, or you might find it, in your neighborhood. But that's what can get you started on the path of not struggling so much, I think.
Are there any goals or expectations they should have?
Well, you don't want to have expectations, because the opposite of expectation is disappointment. So
yeah.
Try not to have... It's difficult with goals, with the inner work. Because you have to be, with the inner work, you're working with the heart, healing your body, and connecting with your soul or your spirit. And things can go up and down. And so you have to be very careful of the mind coming in and judging and comparing. Like, oh, you were so much better last week. Why aren't you better this week? you know, because the mind expects everything to be a linear progression forward and onward and upward. And the reality is, I mean, just take the body, and probably most people know this from healing with the body. It goes up and down. You know, you think you're getting better, and then you have a couple of days where you feel worse, but then you start to feel better again. And slowly, slowly over time, you get better, you know, from whatever it is you've got.
If you would, tell people a little bit about some of your upcoming classes.
Well, I have a number of classes that I do. Immediately coming up is the Four Dimensions of Abundance, Getting Out of Your Own Way. But, and you can find out about that on my website, discovermeditation.com. And then after that, I don't know when this is going live, this interview. On the 12th of April is my program called The Enlightened Rebel. And that ties in with what we were talking about the authentic self. Because The Enlightened Rebel is about learning to be your authentic self.
What a great title.
Thank you.
Now, please check out discovermeditation.com, which is Pragita's website. It is terrific. Her programs are amazing. And I just want to really thank you for being here today. You have so much wisdom to share. And I'd urge anybody who's kind of hitting a bump in the road to consider looking at some of Pragita's courses. She just brings an enormous amount of compassion and wisdom. And I think we can all benefit from it.
Well, thank you. It's been very delightful for me to be here today with you, Pat.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.